You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Cain Vineyard. Cain Vineyard and Winery supports Heritage Radio and the growing movement to change how Americans eat and how we think about our planet. More information on the web at cain5.com. That's C-A-I-N-F-I-V-E.com. Welcome to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Weitz, your host. I've been away for a while. I was in Vietnam yet again, but I'm back. I feel like I haven't done a live show in, I don't know, it feels like months. First, I was sick for like half of February and had no voice. And half February, what am I talking about? October, February. And then I went off to Vietnam again and didn't do a show. And it's like, I feel like I left New York and it was Halloween and it was all fall and, you know, autumny. And now I'm back and it's Christmas. It's bizarre. Like there's all this Christmas stuff hanging up all of a sudden. How did that happen? Oh, I don't get it. Anyway, but I'm back. So it's good to be back. So there was this time in my career, you know, I've been in this industry now, the food industry for like almost 20 years practically. And, there was this period in my career, probably about 14 years ago. It was kind of like in between when I was working in restaurants and when I started teaching, which is pretty much what I do now, sort of the in-between years. I had left the restaurant world. I was burnt out. I was tired, and I hadn't found a full-time teaching job yet. And so I was freelancing. I was doing a lot of freelance work, and it was things like freelancing for caterers, like four or five different caterers in New York. You can do that in New York. You can freelance as a party chef for different companies. And the pay was really good. I mean, compared to what I was making in restaurants, the pay was good. So I did that for a while and did various other things. And I also worked as a personal chef for a while. I had a few different clients and I would go to various people's houses and cook for them either once a week or a couple times a week. And that was a pretty good gig, too. That paid really well. I got to see a lot of really nice apartments. And what I would, you know, do is either shop for them or tell them what to buy. And then I would show up and then I would cook and fill up their fridges with cooked food for the week. Food that often wouldn't get eaten and would still be there the next time I came, because these were all very wealthy people who tended to go out every night but felt like they needed to have a personal chef come and fill up their refrigerators with food because that's what you were supposed to do. And so one of the clients I had back then was this lady who she had gotten my name from another client. They were friends. They were old buddies from their Wall Street days. And so this one client gave her my name. And she called me because I had developed this minor reputation as an Atkins chef. Remember Dr. Atkins and the Atkins diet? Because a few years before that, somehow I had wound up doing a little bit of recipe development for Atkins through another job I had. They were looking for someone to develop some recipes for them, and I wound up doing that. I developed the recipe for the pancakes on the back of the pancake mix box. I don't know if it still exists. It was disgusting, I must say, but it was soy powder and tasted horrible. But anyway, through that, I sort of got this little reputation around town as like the Atkins chef, even though I never really completely agreed with all of his theories. Although I do think that refined white carbs and simple sugars are really the root of all Western disease and obesity. So I do agree with him on that. But the whole like super high protein thing, I'm not so down with that. But anyway, so this lady was heavy. She was probably about 50 pounds overweight, and she decided she wanted to lose weight and she was going to do it through Atkins. And so she hired me to come and cook for her. And because of what she was eating, basically that meant coming to her house and cooking a lot of steak every couple of days, which I would then put in the refrigerator. And then I would come back 3 days later and it would still be there because she didn't eat it because they would go out every night. And so the housekeeper and I would always sit down and eat the leftover food that was left behind in the fridge, the steak and vegetables that I cooked. So there were a lot of good meals for her housekeeper. Although the housekeeper was from, I forgot where she was from, somewhere in West Africa. And so she had to cook the meat for like another 20 minutes because she would only eat it if it was like so well done that it was like eating like a shoe, which always made me upset because I would cook it perfectly. But anyway, so back to this client. So she was this very successful corporate businesswoman. She had worked on Wall Street, had some big career, and she was something like the first female CEO of a major aerospace company, something like that. She was something major that way and had made, you know, a big, serious ton of money and then married some really rich guy too. And then she decided she'd stay home, stop working, stay home with her son. And that's when I was hired to come in and help her lose the weight. And they lived in this massive duplex on Park Avenue. And oddly enough, it was an apartment that I had actually been in before they owned it, because when I was doing the freelance catering, we did a party in that apartment, which was sort of weird. But anyway, it was an apartment that had been made from two apartments that were put together and turned into a duplex. So it had two kitchens in the apartment. And when I got there, they were redoing one of them, or about to start redoing it. And the kitchen had this massive old South Bend range. South Bend is a company that makes restaurant stoves. It was this beautiful old steel restaurant stove with like a griddle and like eight burners. I mean, it was great. And it was like a real one. It wasn't like the ones, like now they have these sort of pro style models that are designed to look like restaurant stoves, but they're really just for home use. They're, you know, to fulfill the chefing fantasies of financiers, basically. But no, this was the real deal. It was solid. It was old. It was powerful. It was great. And I coveted it. I wanted it. And they were renovating this kitchen and they were going to get rid of it. They were getting ready to ditch it. It was too old for them, too industrial looking. You know, you had to like use a match to light the pilot. It was too real. You know, they wanted like whatever. They had the kitchen designer who said that it wouldn't work. So they had to get rid of it. So when they said they were going to get rid of it, I asked them if I could buy it from them. And she said I didn't have to buy it from them, that I could just have it, no charge, if I could get it out of there. So very quickly, I made plans, because she said, you know, we're demoing the kitchen and it has to be out, you know, by whatever date next week or something. You have, you know, 5 days. So I made plans to get a guy with a van to get it out, even though I had no idea how he would carry it out, and, you know, to bring it to Brooklyn and put it in my kitchen, even though I really had no clue if it would even fit A, through the door of my apartment, and B, into my kitchen, and see if I could ventilate it or even anything like that. I only had a few days. So I thought, okay, I'll just get it and then I'll figure all that stuff out. So I was ready to do it. And then their construction manager called me from the apartment and he said there was a problem that they couldn't fit the stove out the kitchen door of the apartment, because it turns out that the previous owners, when they got the stove, they had brought it in using a crane to bring it in 16 stories up through a window. Yes, a crane. So if I wanted to hire, this is what he said. So if you want to hire a crane and pay to have the window removed and then have the window reinstalled, you can have the stove for free. So otherwise they were going to dump it. And I had like 5 days or something to figure it all out. Now, at the time, I was making, you know, under $30,000 a year. I was not making much money, and I didn't really have the budget to hire a crane around. Like, that wasn't really it wasn't feasible for me to hire a crane. So I had to pass on the stove. I had to let it go. And they got rid of it. They had a welder come in and cut it up into pieces and then dragged pieces out and put it in the trash. So tragic. Such a loss. Such an unfathomable waste of resources and of, you know, this great old thing that worked beautifully. And they just didn't want it anymore. They just cut it up, threw it out. We don't want it anymore. Let's cut grandma up and throw her out because she's too old and she doesn't look good anymore. That's what it was like. But then it turned out that I saw my super and I told him about the stove, and he told me that I wouldn't have been able to put it in my apartment anyway because I would not have been able to ventilate it, and it was too powerful, and it would have probably burned down the apartment, and I would have had to fireproof the walls and all kinds of stuff like that. My super is from Romania, and he's very surly, and he said, oh, no, you would not be able to use, not possible. So it's probably for the best, but the waste of it is what just killed me. I mean, if you've listened to the show, you know how I feel about waste. And, you know, why would you ever have chosen to get rid of something like that? I mean, once something like that is in place, just keep it in place. You know, it's like I used to know someone who had this giant loft in Chelsea, you know, in the Flatiron, before it was really hip there. He had this loft, and there was a safe in the loft that had to have been in the building for like 100 years because it was that kind of thing. Once the safe was in place, you couldn't get rid of it. You couldn't move it. You couldn't get it out. So he just had this safe. He didn't have the combination. It was closed. Who knows what was in there? But it was this like 2,000-pound safe. Anyway, so it was this tragic loss of this resource, and it made me sad, and I couldn't have it. So anyway, we have to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk some more. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Cane Vineyard. More information, go to cane5.com. Welcome back to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host. I know that I've changed the name of the show in the past to the Chef Smarty Pants Radio Show, but now I'm not really sure what I want to call it. So tonight it's Why We Cook. I'm still working on it, so just bear with me, please, for a few more weeks while I figure it out. Anyway, so I was talking in the first segment about this stove that I almost had, that I almost got, but then couldn't get because it was too big and I was going to have to hire a crane to get it out of this apartment. So right around the same time that this was going on, I had this boyfriend who was working for the same kind of clients, the overindulged, pampered, privileged residents of Park Avenue and adjoining neighborhoods. He was doing decorative wall painting stuff like Venetian stucco and things like that. It was very hip, hot in the 90s. And that's what he was doing. And he also had a client who was renovating a kitchen at the same time. And this client had this gigantic Sub-Zero refrigerator that was maybe a year old. They had just bought this apartment. The kitchen had just been renovated when they bought the apartment, but they had to renovate the kitchen because they didn't like the way the kitchen was done. And they, of course, had to get rid of the single Sub-Zero refrigerator because they had to get the double-wide model. Are you familiar with these double-wide Sub-Zero refrigerators? They are about 7 feet wide. They have two massive swinging doors that open up onto this, like, vast canyon of huge chilled space, and they had to get the big one. So their standard single door Sub-Zero model fridge had to go. So they were going to just throw it out. That's what they said. We're just going to put it out on the street. We're just going to throw it out. And so when he asked about it, they said the same thing. If you can get it out of here, it's yours. So he knew that I would have been interested in it. And so we got a man with a van and we brought it to Brooklyn, and now it's in my apartment. I have it, and I've had it for about 14 years. And you know what? I hate it. It's really useless, and I hate it, and it's a monster. And if anybody would like it, same thing. You want to get it out of my apartment? Get in touch with me. You can have it. At first, I was really excited about it. I was like, whoa, it's this fridge, a Sub-Zero fridge. At the time, it costs like $5,000 because now they're like seven. I just looked it up before the show. And the double wide models are $13,000. You're basically buying a fridge that costs the same as a small car. And that's what they are. They're sort of like the Buicks of refrigerators. But anyway, at the time, I was really excited. I was going to get this $5,000 fridge for the cost of, you know, the man with the van. And I was also at the time making wedding cakes occasionally. And so I thought, oh, this would be great. I can store the wedding cakes and I can have big dinner parties. And, you know, it was really, I was, you know, very excited about it. But you know what? Like, it doesn't, it's not good. It's this gigantic refrigerator that doesn't actually hold all that much stuff. It's poorly designed on the inside. It's a scam. These massive refrigerators, big scam. It's this huge box with this huge compressor that sucks up energy and takes up a ton of space. Once a year, it's good. At Thanksgiving, I can put my big turkey in it, and that's pretty much all it's good for. I mean, I don't know. People love them. For me, it doesn't really work out so much. I don't know. So what I want to do is get rid of this big refrigerator and put in individually controlled mini drawer fridges. You know about these? You put them like under your counter, and each one is kept at a slightly different temperature, and you can control the humidity, and it's like way, way less energy and less wasteful. And then you only open up the drawer you need, and you know, much better, much more efficient. Now, 14 years ago when I got it, I was very excited. It was this like status-y thing. It was, you know, like a dream. I could have never afforded that. But now, I just want the smallest, like most efficient option. And those giant fridges to me, they're like the SUVs of appliances. Like they represent like everything that's wrong with the U.S. Like the SUV also represents everything that's wrong with us. They're bloated and inefficient and unnecessary, like a holdover of another era. They're like the remnant of the excesses of the last 20 years. And who needs that? I mean, unless you have like more than 8 kids, do you really need that big of a refrigerator? I mean, people, you know, large families have been around since the beginning of time, and they've managed without the Escalade size fridge. And even that, like, if you have that many kids, is it that you actually need that much space, or is that you're buying too much stuff with too much packaging and plastic and not enough actual real food? See, I think that's what it is. So I also have a client now. I have this private client now who I teach privately once a month. And she lives up in Connecticut. And she's a very nice lady. She went even further. She has a walk-in in her house. A walk-in fridge. Like in a restaurant. If you've ever worked in a restaurant, you know the walk-in. It's like the refrigerated room. That's what she has. A walk-in. Plus the huge Sub-Zero. Plus the drawers. Now, she also lives in a house that's 30,000 square feet. So I don't think she's so concerned with excess. I think she's sort of, you know, the theme of their lives is excess. And she has a staff, a household staff of almost 20 people. So I don't think she's really all that concerned with downscaling anything. But, you know, maybe she needs to spend a couple weeks in Vietnam or something. Because that's where I just came back from, and they don't really have much refrigeration there. The reason that I'm talking about all of this so much is because coming back from there made me really think this time about some of the differences in how we live our lives. Now, if you've listened to the show regularly, you know I go to Vietnam a couple times a year to work for Streets International. And I just came back, and I'm very tired because I just got in yesterday. But I was really thinking about this time that, you know, it's not just the refrigerators. It's you know, we know this. We live this sort of bloated, overblown lifestyle. Our cars are really big. Our refrigerators are really big. Our butts are really big, you know, because like we do everything too big here. It's like too much. And so let's think about your refrigerator. Think about how big it is. Now, if you live in the city, if, you know, most people listening to this live in cities, but some of you maybe live in rural areas or in the suburbs. But if you live in a New York City apartment, your fridge is probably not very big. It's probably maybe the size of the one you grew up with, or maybe even much smaller than that. Urban people tend to not have the space for this sort of thing. I lived in Rome for a couple of months about a decade ago, and we only had like a little under-the-counter model, like a little tiny one, like, you know, a dorm fridge, basically, because we had this beautiful, fresh outdoor market two blocks away, and we'd go there every day and buy food fresh every day. So all you needed to keep in the fridge were just, you know, staples and your milk. Now, I know we can't live like Europeans because we're too busy working our large asses off to hold on to our health insurance. So we don't have time to shop for fresh food every day. But you know, I think we live this sort of weird lifestyle where we feel like we need to stock up on things and have a lot of stuff just in case, you know, like in case Armageddon comes or the apocalypse or something. I don't know. You know, so coming back from Vietnam, where there is practically no refrigeration at all, you know, like many second and third world countries, people just don't have them, or they're just starting to. Like in Vietnam, you know, they're rapidly modernizing, and you can buy them in the appliance stores, and some people have them, but it's not like here. People maybe have a little tiny one for a couple of things, but you know, it's like in Europe, they buy their food and daily they buy it fresh because there's market in every little village. It's, you know, not the weekly trip to the supermarket model like we have. But even in the markets, the outdoor markets, none of the food is on ice. Nothing is kept cold. Nothing is refrigerated. We've sort of refrigerated and sanitized and food, like, what's the word? Like, food sanitation ruled ourselves into this like cold little box, you know, where we feel so afraid to keep anything out at room temperature that we sort of really like lost touch with what happens to food when you leave it out. How does the flavor change? How does it ripen? How quickly does it spoil? You know, it's like we have this like phobia about leaving anything out. And it's not necessarily a good thing. I mean, I'm sure it prevents illness in some ways, but some foods taste better when they're not cold. You know, to chill every single thing to near freezing temperatures isn't good. Like tomatoes aren't supposed to be refrigerated. They don't taste good if you keep them cold. You should leave them out, and then they just slowly ripen more and more and more and get better. And refrigerating actually ruins their flavor. A lot of fruit is that way too. Refrigerating them will kill the flavor. And, you know, ripening and aging is like a part of how food develops, and letting things slightly ferment is important too. The aging and fermenting process is actually beneficial for us, nutritionally speaking. As certain foods age and ferment, they actually develop more B vitamins. And those are those B vitamins that you only otherwise get from eating meat. So if you're not a meat eater, you have to eat fermented foods. It's why vegetarians eat things like miso and tempeh and sauerkraut, because that's how they're getting their Bs that they would otherwise get from eating meat. And if you keep your food too cold, it doesn't ferment, it doesn't develop, it doesn't ripen, it doesn't spoil. But you know, I think part of the problem, like part of why we're just not so healthy, is because we're not allowing that sort of controlled spoilage in a way to happen to our food. When you develop those fermented qualities in food, it helps, and you eat them, they're probiotics. It stimulates your immune system. It keeps you healthy. Maybe that's why we're not so healthy, because we're not eating enough of that. You know, instead we go and we buy refrigerated yogurt with added probiotics added to it for twice the cost of regular yogurt. Anyway, I mean, some of the best flavors in food come from controlled spoilage. Think about cheese, think about wine, aged meats, cured meats, sauerkraut, pickles, Those are all foods that taste better when they're left to sort of spoil in a way. And it all happens at cellar temperature, which is like in the mid 50s, 56, 58. That's cellar temperature. And it's like the perfect temperature for keeping your food from rotting, but not keeping it from developing. So how come we don't have cellars anymore? Why aren't we using the whole root cellar idea anymore? Once we developed refrigeration, the whole root cellar thing went away. And that's kind of too bad, because I think it's sort of the perfect answer. It's the sort of like right in between temperature. But, you know, it's like we live in fear of letting our food get too close to that, unless it's wine, of course. But anyway, like we shop and store food as if we're still expecting famine, you know, or some like long, cold, blizzard-filled winter where we won't be able to leave the house, you know, like it's like national, like a Little House on the Prairie, you know. Our national psyche still thinks we're living on the prairie in the 1860s, and we better like store up enough food, you know, to get us through the winter, stash it all away, you know, because starvation might set in, even though we can access food everywhere now. Anyway, so you know that I get a little obsessed with waste and wastefulness. And so when I come back from a place like Vietnam where people are like seriously thrifty about stuff, it kind of galls me to see the way we live. You know, when these supermarkets that are like acres and acres of refrigerated cases, you know, like you go into a supermarket now and it's like there's like a mile of frozen and refrigerated packaged food going right down the middle. And everything in those cases is processed, frozen, packaged, kind of like non-food, really. None of it's like really food. It's nothing in its sort of natural state. It's all like other stuff. It's not really food. It's made originally from food, but now it's not really food. And so, you know, think of like the resources involved to produce that food and to package it and to keep it frozen and transport and then keep it in freezer cases under 24-hour lighting. And then we stand there with the doors of those cases wide open, you know, while we ponder like what flavor of Hot Pockets we're going to buy. Anyway, I'm very jet lagged, which is why I'm rambling on about this. But, you know, I'm guilty of this myself. I mean, I like a good trip to Costco, too. I like a bargain and I like to buy in bulk. But I try not to get caught up in it. And I try not to avoid buying individually packaged things. And I, you know, I like if I go to Costco, it's because I want to buy like 20 cans of black beans, not because I want to buy like the 300 pack of, you know, frozen burritos, because I'd rather buy the beans and make my own burritos instead. So I, you know, you have to strike a balance with all of this. And so, you know, what I'm proposing here is that maybe we all just try to cut down a little bit on some of the packaging, some of the bulk, some of the loading up of the fridge, you know, with stuff that maybe we don't need. Americans throw out a phenomenal amount of food every week that we buy. And maybe it's because we're buying too much at once because we have these giant refrigerators and we can fill them up. Maybe if we forced ourselves into smaller fridges, we would buy less and eat it more quickly. And I'm also proposing that maybe you leave some of your stuff out a little bit, like leave your fruit out on the table, maybe some of your root vegetables. I don't know. See what happens. Unfortunately, now that it's the season where the heat gets turned on, like my apartment is so hot that I think if I left some stuff out, it would just rot instantly. But let's give it a try. Let's, you know, maybe buy a little less and eat it more quickly and see if we can waste a little bit less. Anyway, we're out of time. But you know, it's just something to think about until next week. So that's all the time we have. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.